Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. For those unaware, we're actually recording this episode live at our local cheese fair. So if you're in the area, come on down and say hi. We'll be here all week, and we hope you have a gooda time. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and I wanted to come up with my favorite cheese, but I'm pretty sure I'm lactose intolerant, so I don't really have a favorite cheese. But if I did have a favorite cheese, it would probably be brie, because I like the way that it kind of just tastes and feels like rubber. That's sort of always been very interesting to me on sort of a textural level. You can find me on Twitter at Shitake Harry. Can't remember if I already said that.
Brie is great. Great choice of cheese, Harry. I am a cheese head, as I come from the land of Wisconsin Green Bay Packers. You can find me at Instagram at Chatty Cheesehead, or, you know, on that was my old AIM name. I'm Emily Suey. Did we say our names even? Back kinda. To you, Cody.
You got it. Sweet. Thanks. Hey, you know what? We were talking before we hopped on mic that we're going to need to generate some extra content for this episode because this pairing is, spoilers, very weird. And you know what? I'm loving this so far. But hey, all aboard the SS Super Producer, which is captained by Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. Stacy's mom spells Stoop Kids with a Z. Tune in every week. You can listen for free. Stacy, have you heard the spelling of this word? This bit is just for me, but Stoop Kids is spelled with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest. He's yet another OG guest making his triumphant debut onto the season 4 stage. Please welcome back to the show, Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, how you doing?
Are you just going to drop that banger without no comment, no room to comment on it or tell us
you,
why
you thought
it
you thought us dropping our favorite cheeses was that good, huh? Well, geez, I don't okay. Well, hey,
okay, yeah,
appreciate the feedback. That's thank you. That's wow, that's awesome.
I just wasn't expecting such an amazing parody at the beginning of the show. It's great to be back. I'm sure I'm remembered by everyone who listens. I'm the guy who talks on the podcast. These episodes were different than I remembered. I chose these episodes from a list of episodes that I wanted to be on. And they were infamous at best. So I'm excited to hear what everyone has to say about them.
Yeah, me as well. Hey, even the weird turds are good to. They generate good content. And as we were saying, you're the king of content, Drew. Don't sell yourself short. Turds is too strong. I feel bad about that. But or hey, maybe it's correct given the relativity of the episodes that we've talked about up to this point. I guess I should say today we are here to talk about episode 68 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 4, episode 8, going by production code order. We're going to start with episode A, as always, which is called Love and Cheese. Original air date, April 7th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. It's just Operation Ruthless is what Wikipedia said. No, Helga tries to separate Arnold and Lila while at the annual cheese fair. That is the synopsis. And as we always do, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible, including Frank Weiss, who directed this one, and Steve Vixton, who got the writing credit. Let's just go ahead and jump right in. Harry, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of spoiled my take, which I'm sure is your take too, which is that like, this isn't a bad episode, right? Because it was once a great episode called Operation Ruthless. This episode is the same episode as that episode is, but not as good. I don't really know why this happened. Maybe there were just a lot of episodes that needed to be written and they were on a tight schedule. And listen, like, we're an enthusiast podcast. I love Hey Arnold very much, right? Like, I think that for the most part, it is one of the most creative, exciting, and sort of like joyful shows I've seen. But man, I was frustrated by this one, right? Because like, it's just the same episode that they did three seasons ago. You can't just do the same episode again. I guess interesting things about it. One, it starts off with a serious banger of a Jim Lang song. You'd love to hear that. Second, it was really interesting to see Arnold have this Lila flashback or like a dream sequence, and sort of continues in the season four tradition of making these characters really feel like they've matured a bit since previous seasons. I mean, I think that like Arnold's idea of the ideal date with Lila is considerably more mature and advanced and less sort of fantastic than a season one Arnold's would have been. And it's really interesting to note that he actually, though it's difficult for him, manages to ask Lila out and manages to actually talk to the object of his affection, right? As opposed to Operation Ruthless, where the line, "Hi, Ruth," was so famous. So those are interesting things. Those are differentiating factors. It's really interesting to see Lila be put in this position. I don't think I really like this portrayal of her either. She was a relatively three-dimensional character, if sort of a minor character in previous episodes. And in this episode, she is like very, very much the two-dimensional object of Arnold's affection, and also seems to be sort of like toying with his affections, which is not really something that I had the notion that Lila would do in previous episodes. And it's a little bit weird and a little bit gross. And, you know, no spoilers, but like, I really like the thing about Lila that she has been very staunch and very upfront about the fact that she doesn't like Arnold and that there is no hope. And that will recur later in the season and in the series when she gets involved with Arnie, the doppelganger of Arnold. Looking forward to those episodes. But so I found it weird that she was characterized this way, right? And I think that it's another example of many examples of the ways in which, like, I just feel that this episode is very uninspired, I guess. Not bad to watch. I liked the date. I liked, you know, Helga's great as always, but again, you know, like, Helga was literally doing exactly the same thing she did in Operation Ruthless, and to the same effect, they even took the ending from Operation Ruthless. And like, the Operation Ruthless ending is great and very impactful and very like brutal and insightful, and here it's like just a truncated version of the same thing. And I just, you know, I really like Operation Ruthless, I guess, is my takeaway from this episode. Back to you all.
Yeah, that's a good summation. And I can't help but regret my use of the word turd. I just use it in conjunction with the fact that it is, like you said, Harry, I mean, this episode is already done and it's one of the best episodes of the show. Turdness is relative. That is a saying that's going to be on a shirt that's coming to our online shop. So be on the lookout for that. While I put in the patent for that, I will kick it over to Emily. Emily, what did you think about Love and Cheese, you cheesehead?
Thanks for asking, Cody. Yeah, Love and Cheese. I also wrote in my notes just Operation Ruthless Part 2, but Lila, or even just Operation Ruthless, but Lila, essentially is what this episode is. Even so, though, I got really excited when I was watching it, when the Cheese Festival like plot gets unraveled, because I was like, oh my God, I miss the freaking Cheese Festival. We haven't been there since season one. Finally, we can go back to the annual festival Hillwood has. And to quote the show, this episode, nothing brings people closer together than cheese, which I do think is true as a cheesehead. But yeah, I also, there's a lot of moments I liked a lot in this one. I didn't feel like negatively towards this one. I don't like dislike this episode. I think it's too bad that it's so similar, I guess, to the season one banger Operation Ruthless. But I was writing down a lot of moments I was enjoying throughout it, namely Helga's soliloquy when she's talking about Arnold in the cafeteria, talking specifically about his willy-nilly hair sticking out all over his football head, made me laugh. And she's like on the floor of the cafeteria when the soliloquy is happening. Lila had some great lines when they arrive with her and Arnold arrive at the annual cheese festival. She says, "Gosh, it's beautiful, Arnold. I've never seen so much cheese." Just like the pause before the cheese. Yeah, I don't know. I think the writers just must have really liked cheese in general. We're talking about cheese a lot. It's kind of funny. It's hilarious that they make this setting for the show and for an episode. It is very, very similar to Operation Ruthless. Like, all the rides and the festival itself are the same and things that are happening. Helga is not using much of Phoebe in this episode, though, as she was in Operation Ruthless. She's kind of just doing her own scheming to destroy the date that they're on, or that Arnold and Lila are on, essentially. And yeah, I really liked the cheesehead caps and cheesehead vests that all the festival attendees are wearing. My family had like cheesehead hats that looked exactly like those caps. Because if you're a Green Bay Packers fan, there's no stopping the variety of types of cheesehead hats you could have. Cowboy hats, caps, oh my gosh, so many others I will spare you. But what else did I write down? I really like just the quick moment of seeing Gerald and Phoebe walk by because they are on a date and their whole trajectory is happening and it's just like a moment you see in passing. Arnold's idea was so terrible to take her on Built to Hurl after she says, "Yeah, I really don't like spinny rides. Like, those make me feel nauseous," or whatever. She says something like that. And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, but I just, it's like really fun. And I just know that like, it'll be fun and it's not that bad." And it's like, Arnold, she's telling you like, this is going to be bad. And then Helga's scheme to make it go even faster, I thought was pretty funny, of telling the guy, "Hey, mister, kids are complaining that this ride just isn't fast enough." That was my favorite scheme of hers in this one. Also really, yeah, just was thinking about how in general, and I think maybe this is why I like the episode, or I'm not like, I don't want to discredit it because I like that it does this specific thing. It's just showing you that like, if two people have a strong connection and they work well together, they have chemistry, whatever, there's no one in an outside force or no person that can really stop that connection from happening. No amount of like, I don't know, gossip, slander, scheming, whatever can like, I think, mess with that connection that people have. People just sort of adapt to those outside factors, you know, for better or for worse, till death do us part, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, no, I like that concept of this episode, I should say. And I think that Lila not really liking Arnold, but saying that she really, really likes him, just not likes him. But then also she says, yes, there's hope, though, that is messed up and that's unfortunate. And I think she's just maybe too much of a people pleaser to really tell him, I don't know, the business there at the end. But yeah, so that's too bad. I'm glad Harry pointed that out. And then I guess one other last thing I'll say is that is a sick boy, to quote Gerald. Arnold is down bad.
The downest of bad. The down of baddest. Arnold himbo status confirmed time and time again. Someone who is ostensibly not a himbo, Drew, what did you think about this episode that we're here to talk about today?
Thanks. I'm so glad to hear that I'm not considered a himbo. I wasn't sure, and that's actually the reason that I came on the podcast today, was to get that judgment. So I don't know if we want to end the episode now or not, but
thank you for listening to Stoop Kids. Drew, where can people go ahead? Sorry.
I echo a lot of what people are saying about this episode, about how it's really just like the same as an episode we've already seen. It's still entertaining, though, and I think that they knew what they were doing. Like, I think they, in their head, they thought this was like an homage of some kind, right? Like, we've made it this far, let's do another one with like this current love interest, and it almost works for that sensibility. I think where it stumbles most is that it doesn't lean hard enough into either of its two plots, right? Like, so there's, I guess, the A plot. I don't know which is the A plot or which is the B plot. I'm going to call A plot Arnold and Lila, and B plot Helga scheming, and it doesn't really lean too heavily. Like, I think the split is too even, and as a result, like, the whole episode, like, doesn't have any center. And I think the right choice, at least from my perspective, would have been to lean harder into the Wile E. Coyote side of what, like, Helga's doing, right? Like, seeing the wind-up, seeing her schemes, like, look at all these things that I did, and then seeing the Rube Goldberg unfold incorrectly, right? And, like, seeing that how that affects her, and, right, like, seeing it from her perspective. Because having that split towards, like, this sincere take on Arnold's perspective also is, it really takes away from anything that we see Helga do, right? Like, she's just, like, a runner, right? It's not, almost not even a B-plot, it's just, like, a running bit. Right, she's just there for comedic relief almost. And if we saw like the length that she went through, and we can hear her thoughts and like what, you know, her reactions to when things fail, I think this episode would have been a lot more interesting. And I think that's where I would have liked to see it go, if I was going to play script doctor here. Again, there's a lot to love, like that the tunnel of love scene, and like them going over the waterfall, like that's something that I remember to this day, right? Like I still remember that scene. It's why I chose this episode. The one of the stands is cheese juice. I can't imagine what that is, but I don't want to drink it. And we learn some deep lore about Lila, and that her favorite animal is a turtle, and that her favorite country is Mexico. And I want to break here and hear what people's theories about like what this means. Like what this, they dropped this for a reason, and I want to know what it means.
I mean, I think she, I'm skirting the question a little bit, but I'm liking the idea of reading it as her being a people pleaser, just like whatever's put in front of her. It's like, oh, that's my favorite thing. It's like, oh, the topic I'm too nice of a person to like be, to feel comfortable in awkward situations. I'm just like, oh, you won me this crappy toy. It's like, oh, it's a turtle. I love turtles. And it was, oh, made in Mexico. Wow. Mexico is my absolute most favorite country.
Yeah,
Arnold,
okay.
great job. I'm playing with your feelings and really hyping you up in a sick way. I don't know if other people have other theories, but that's the first thing I think of, Drew.
I really like that theory. Hashtag Lila was lying. Lion Lila.
Absolutely.
Hashtag Lion Lila. My alternative theory is that this is sort of like a recurring bit on season four, that at this point in Helga's trajectory, the universe itself is conspiring against her. Sort of like Helga is now trapped in a purgatory of her own design. And I think that like, there's something almost to Emily's point about the theme of this episode, about how you just can't keep two people who are going to connect apart. There was like a preternatural, supernatural element to this, where it's like he reaches down and the turtle was there because the universe placed it there to thwart Helga, right? It's like this is about the theme of Helga receiving punishment for her refusal to be honest about her own feelings. That's what the turtle in Mexico symbolize here, in my opinion.
The law of karma, essentially.
That's exactly right.
Amazing. And so much deeper and more than I could have possibly imagined when I asked this question. I was thinking there was going to be some funny bits and jokes as answers. But like, these are real real theories.
It's the new Nickelodeon show. Ah, real theories. Coming soon to the,
yeah,
the
let's
fall.
Let's get Matt Pat on the podcast.
Oh God, what a dream come true that would be.
And then I think the only thing I have to say that I didn't mention in my part is that at the very end they like focus on many shots of this guy in like a full body cheese wedge costume. Like you can't even see his head. Like it's just like a walking wedge of cheese, and he's in multiple. We don't know who they are. They could be any gender or object or robot inside there, but they're in a cheese costume, and I thought that was really funny. And the Lady and the Tramp bit at the beginning with the cheese, we gotta call that out. I don't know what the point of that scene was, if not literally just to parody Lady and the Tramp. I guess he's imagining what it would be like to be at a sexy cheese festival.
To be fair, I'm always thinking about what it would be like to be at a sexy cheese festival.
I just think that's part of what's good about it is just the bit that the writers took this to the furthest extremes of what cheese, what is every type of cheese, every cheese combination, every scenario from beautiful romantic rom-com movies like Lady and the Tramp. What scenes can you take from that that involve cheese now? So I think they pushed the cheese envelope really far, but not so much like the with creating an original episode necessarily in this one, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess, you know, it's I don't really have a cheese related segue, but hearing everybody's thoughts about this episode, I maybe something like a 1-2 punch or shot chaser scenario. But think while watching the episode, I got thinking about, you know, why the frustrations from me and many of us here that, you know, this does feel like a carbon copy of Operation Ruthless. And I think part of the nuances of the two episodes of like what these characters are actually doing are hugely important to why one version worked more so than the other. Even trying my best to lose the you know, the variable that one of them came much before the other, it's like considered a classic episode. I've probably seen it more in my lifetime, but Operation Ruthless has Arnold and Helga both pursuing their own, you know, they're pursuing, Arnold's pursuing Ruth, Helga's pursuing Arnold. They have their parallel aims and they're both failing, but they're doing so like gloriously and in very like funny, spectacular ways. And at the end of the episode, Arnold perceives his situation with a little more cautious optimism. We have the nice upbeat of, you know, just a very quick, you know, upswing moment that we all latch onto because we love Phoebe and Gerald, but like where they walk off together. You have those moments and then you have Helga standing alone as the lights turn off and it's a very somber ending. And then you contrast that to this and it's everything, you know, everything's coming up Arnold, you know, everything is working out for him accidentally. His trajectory is going up. Helga is by her, you know, with what she's trying to doing, she's by all counts failing. And that just creates this big chasm between them where like their journeys are not parallel. And even by the end, like maybe I would feel differently if like Lila's communication was different, but it wasn't. She offered up this weird like sliver of hope that's like, oh, maybe I could like you someday. If she had slammed the door in his face, maybe I would feel a little bit better about this episode, but that doesn't happen. And I, to Drew's point about, you know, still finding, you know, means of enjoyment and entertainment within this episode. I think back to, well, we needed a movie reference in here at some point. I think back to when I was younger and just like watching the Back to the Future movies on cable. And like, obviously the first one is very famous. I remember thinking about the second one more because of like the later acts of, hey, this environment where the first movie took place, I guess, spoilers for Back to the Movies 1 and 2, I guess, these, you know, decades old movies. yeah, Emily, plug your ears. But just like they're playing around in the same environment and they'll like, hey, this labyrinth, they've already figured out how to get through this. So like, how do they get through it again without stepping over like the path that they just took? That sort of like narrative calculus, I remember being very fascinated by. And I guess once I take a step back and think about these episodes more in a vacuum, I think maybe I can appreciate Love and Cheese a little bit more in that way, just because, yes, it is a almost too obvious of an homage to Operation Ruthless down to, I mean, Harry, like you said in the chat here, same writer. And so like they do know what they're doing. And because we know what's going to happen in this episode, they can almost have a little more fun being like, yeah, Lila's dangling over a waterfall, dude. like what are the big sort of spectacular things that we can have these characters do to get them to end up to the point where, oh, this is all just going to fall back on Helga's face. Having it so both Arnold and Helga would fail in like comparable amounts would still feel nice. But I think on that front, I could maybe appreciate this episode a little more upon rewatch. I was just, you know, I was just so livid. I was riding on the fumes from the bonfire of me being angry and my flames just trickling upwards. It's hard to contain that sort of fire sometimes, but you know, that's why we do this.
I really, really liked how you characterized the differences between this episode and Operation Ruthless, Cody. That was great. Like I did say, like Steve Vixton wrote Operation Ruthless as well. And in fact, like before we watch this episode, Drew and I had like a weird moment where he was like, oh yeah, I'm doing the cheese episode. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, didn't we already do the cheese festival episode? And then it was like, oh, I was mistaken. Operation Ruthless didn't take place at a cheese festival. It was just like a carnival or something. And this is the cheese episode. But it even literally did take place at the cheese festival again. So you're right. Like, I really like Drew's point that this episode is an homage to that episode, and it's even sort of supposed to be demonstrating the growth in maturity or lack thereof of these two characters, right? Like, because Arnold had the experiences he had in Operation Ruthless, he is able to move forward and become more mature in his pursuit of Lila, whereas Helga is stuck doing the same thing she was doing then because she hasn't acknowledged her own feelings. But I just wish that, I guess to that point, they should have, if they were being so clear about an homage and making this sort of a sequel to Operation Ruthless, they should have brought it up, right? Like, it would have only been something like Gerald on the bus saying, like, I don't know, Arnold, you remember how the Cheese Festival went for you last year, right? Like, literally, that would be all you would have to say, and I would have been totally fine, and that criticism would have been disarmed. And then there's the other point, which is that why end this episode exactly the way you ended the last one if you weren't going to, if this was supposed to be a sequel, right? And I, honest to God, like, this isn't even script doctoring because it's what I remember this episode being. I was waiting this entire episode for Lila to turn down Arnold at the end and then Helga to approach him and to be like, oh, it's okay, right? Someone will like you someday. You have a lot to offer or whatever. Like, in my mind palace, that's what I remember this episode being. And so I was like, okay, I think that, like, I kind of had the opposite reaction that you did, Cody, where, like, I was not angry about this episode for most of the episode because I thought they were going to make good on what they were doing and demonstrate the growth between these two characters and how Helga is finally sort of like slowly starting to come to terms with the fact that she's going to have to be honest about these feelings she has eventually. When that didn't happen at the end of this episode, I was like, wait, so what was it all for? Right? It was like, so you didn't make good on the fact that you were just redoing Operation Ruthless. You just made a worse Operation Ruthless, right? And I guess that's my main frustration with it, is that you had to show some sort of like progression of Helga's arc, I feel, or at least to be more clear about why that progression isn't happening, right? By calling back to it more explicitly. I mean, it's a weird episode as a result, right? Because it's like, I really like the premise and I like the characterizations. And I even really like what you had said, Cody, about the fact that like, they're clearly having even more fun than they had in Operation Ruthless. But ultimately I just struggle with the, how essential this episode is, I guess. It really feels like one that doesn't need to be there, I guess.
Yeah, to that point, I'm thinking about how this is maybe just trying to set up the false hope of Arnold and Lila, or, you know, any hope at all for them, because we're going to see Weird Cousin later this season. So they're just trying to, like, mess with our expectations of Arnold does like her. We know that he's got the crush on her, and she acts sometimes like she's into him and sometimes not, and it's not clear, so maybe it's just trying to continue to blur that relationship trajectory for us in the season four. But also, I think to everyone else's point too, the ending of this one compared to Operation Ruthless is just, it doesn't slap as hard because you just have the Helga's under the streetlight and she throws down her towel and the streetlight goes dark. But you're not left with that lingering like heartbreak of how they wrapped things in Operation Ruthless. But what I was trying to remember too is just like in Operation Ruthless, was there a part of it that was about Arnold asking Ruth to go to the festival? Because I feel like that also is a newer thing to this one. Just the anxiety Arnold is feeling and his whole speech to Lila about, would you maybe want to possibly, and he can't really ask her what he's trying to ask her. I feel like that maybe was a newer section of this, and it reminded me of like asking someone to a school dance kind of anxiety.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, that's the arc, right? Like I said, because he had the experiences he had in Operation Ruthless, he has come a long way, right? Like, instead of just sort of like semi-stalking Ruth around the cheese festival, he actually asks Lila to go with him, and they go together. Whereas Helga is trapped again in this sort of like purgatorial time as a flat circle, where like every year the cheese festival will come, and every year she will try to thwart Arnold's amorous intentions with his love interest, and every year she will fail in exactly the same way until she herself becomes the person who goes to the cheese festival with Arnold, right? I almost like, I wish they would have set it up that way more intentionally, right? Like, I wish that they would have like played with the idea that it's like, oh, this is like a forever recurring problem for Helga, right? It's like, this is her hell, is like the cheese festival is always coming, and Arnold is always interested in somebody else, and she's always trying to thwart him, and it never works out, right? But instead, I just don't think that they were as obvious as they should have been.
Are you saying that they literally should have done a time loop episode where like Helga keeps reliving the cheese festival, and each time Arnold goes with Lila, and she like eventually has to break the time loop by working up the courage to ask Arnold instead? Anyway, that would be the real episode, right? Then it's the real homage, right? Like, it's an actual play at Operation Ruthless, but like Helga's like changing the future.
What if it was like a Helga dream sequence, right? Like, you could even show like 80-year-old Arnold with like 80-year-old Lila, and like they're still going to the cheese festival, and he's like, is there any hope that we'll be together?
That's kind of like that episode of Invader Zim where they go and play the entire timeline to see who threw the muffin at Zim's head.
Anyway. Exactly.
Dang. All sorts of fun references. I would watch that as a full movie, though. The Time Loop Cheese Festival, like, more than just an episode. That is an at least 90-minute movie, easily.
Talk to Craig. Craig! Call up Craig!
Craig, we know you're listening. This is a free idea that you should pay us for, you buddy of ours. Any other lingering threads or shout-outs that we want to float out for Love and Cheese?
I've got a quick shout out for Gerald on the bus with his eyes closed, smiling to himself, listening to music, bopping. We had one scene like that where Arnold was doing the same thing on another Drew episode of Soup Kids, which was Mugged. And I really like those moments of seeing them jamming to music in their headphones. Yeah. Shout out to also script Dr. Drew.
Definitely big shout out to Gerald in this episode, both for what you mentioned, Emily, and also like they perfectly encapsulate in him what it's like to have a friend who has a crush when you don't, like, when you're not about that, right? It's just like, I feel like he and Arnold are constantly talking about Lila, and he's like tired of it. Like, you can tell at the episode starts, and he's kind of like Arnold says, so the cheese festival's coming up, and Gerald's like, yeah. And he's like, I was thinking maybe, and Gerald's like, yeah. And he can see that Arnold is looking at Lila while he's talking to, and you can tell Gerald's so like bored of this. He's just like, just do whatever you're going to do, dude. It's not going to work out for you. Right. So shout outs to Gerald here. We've all been in that position, and we've all been in Arnold's position. So like, you know, you, whom among us, then the other thing is, I really love the line with Lila where after she super annoyingly refuses to let Arnold play bumper cars, she's like, she like takes his arm, which again, trifling. Why would she take his arm? Why is she playing with him like this? But anyway, she goes, the important thing is that you didn't. What was it? Like, you didn't give in to the violent impulses like all the other children did. And then they walk off together happy. And I was like, what? I really love that line. And it's so strange. And, but very Lila, I think. So a little bit of good characterization there.
What about the napkin version of Arnold, that Helga sees a little napkin version of Arnold? It just kind of reminds me of like all the, They consistently do that through the series, like little shrines of Arnold made of different things.
Hey, That's it's called Good Art. I don't know. Well, I do know a little something about that because we have this podcast, and I'm going to, yeah, I know. I got my second booster yesterday. My brain is running on fumes right now, everybody. I don't know what to tell you. So I'm going to go, mull this over with a bucket of chips and a big bowl of queso, and, we'll come back after the break. So don't touch that dial. We'll be back. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Ooh, that bucket of chips is still sitting in there. So we'll see how this discussion goes. We've got episode B, though, to talk about next year. And that episode is called Weighing Harold. Original air date, April 7th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Harold, after discovering his friends think he is obese, decides to go on a weight loss cruise. When he comes back, though, he is noticeably larger. And once again, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible. Christine Kolosoff directed this one, and Steve Vixton, 2 for 2 this week, got the writing credit for this one as well. So with that being said, Emily, let's kick it to you first this time. What did you think about this episode B?
Yeah, another food episode, I guess, another food-centric one with our love and cheese being the A. This is definitely more of a B episode and a lot of issues across the board, really, with treatment, I guess, of fat people and fat characters and, fat phobia. I feel like I've heard before, though, fat phobia is not the greatest phrase to use either, though, because it's like people who discriminate against fat people aren't scared of them necessarily. It's not a fear of fat people. It's just like prejudice and discrimination. But they're also trying to deal with Harold as a fat character, but maybe not in the best ways, I think, across the board. Sometimes yes, maybe sometimes a lot, not so much. But I think a few things I liked about it. I like, in general, Mr. Fudgies, because I like fudgesicles, and creamy, chocolatey popsicles are great. They make me think of Johnny Pops. Not that I'm plugging Johnny Pops, but just like really good creamy popsicles where it's not the icy ones, but it's actual ice cream creamy. That's great. What else to say about the episode? I think a big part of it too for me is the parents' discussion when they're at Harold's house, because Harold's really struggling a lot with bullying and kind of the whole episode. I mean, that's part of why it's a hard watch, is like you're just seeing him being treated terribly because he's, you know, a little bit overweight and stuff, and people are really cruel to him. Even just people passing by on the street saying, you know, no, honey, don't say that. He's not a fat man. He's a fat boy. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, leave Harold alone. He's just existing. He's just a kid being a kid, whatever. But anyway, when the parents are at dinner, and Harold's going, you know, am I fat? Am I fat? Like, tell me, mom and dad, I'm struggling a lot. He doesn't go into detail about the bullying he's experiencing. But his mom just right away is like dismissing it and trying to play up like the nice card with like, no, you're just a big boned husky guy. Like, you're not fat. And that doesn't help him, though, understand like where the bullies are coming from or what to do with that. She's just kind of more dismissing the fact that he has this bullying issue and doesn't really give him anything from that discussion to like grab onto and understanding, I don't know, navigating bullying with this. But also the 1-800 I am huge Cheese Louise as a call line for the kids cruise to lose commercial that Harold happens to see. I feel bad watching this episode. Also it sucks that Harold gains weight because he's stress eating from being bullied about being fat on the kids cruise to lose cruise, which is like marketed to kids who are bigger, and just like, oh, it's all really a hard watch. And yeah, I think Arnold doesn't make sense as the person to help him with this problem at all. And so because of that plot point, it just is like, man, what are we doing here? But I want to hear what y'all think about it.
I do as well, and I'll pivot directly to Harry. Harry, what did you think about this particular cruise that we found ourselves on this evening?
Yeah, thanks, Cody. This is a really weird and interesting episode as a data point, to use one of Cody's terminologies, just because, like, this was kind of what the 90s was like, huh? Like, we don't like to think about that very much, but, like, especially in, like, the late 90s and early 2000s, like, people were really open about discussing and like shaming children for weight issues in a way that, like, thank God is not really socially acceptable anymore. But, like, it was a huge problem, and it's pretty rough to, like, get that history lesson from Hey Arnold, right? Like, for whatever reason, all of the sort of empathy that is extended to so many different people and different walks of life in Hey Arnold, they just felt comfortable not extending it in the same way to fat people, which was also something that just generally was going on a lot in children's media in the 90s. And it created a lot of very real, very terrible problems that a lot of people had to deal with and are still dealing with, right? So, like, it's tough. It's tough to see it depicted in a show that we are otherwise such big fans of, right? Like, in a lot of ways, this is like a worse episode than even like The Flood, which was a weird racist episode, right? This is like even more explicitly, like, there are straight up jokes in this episode about fat people that we are just supposed to laugh at because it's funny that he's fat, right? And it's like, what the hell's going on, right? I guess, if I can, like, I don't really want to mount a defense of this episode at all, but there is an interesting idea that it's very realistic, or it's focused on pragmatism, right? Like, I think that there is a nugget of a good idea in making an episode about the experience of being a fat kid and being bullied for it, because that is something that children would really be going through. And to sort of, like, take that on in a quote-unquote very special episode kind of way has merit. But if they were doing that, they really screwed that up, right? Like, I think that, like, Arnold, like, for one thing, a really weird thing that happens here is that at no point are the bullies ever sort of, like, shamed for being really terrible people and bullies in this episode, which, again, like, maybe they were trying for an extreme realist, extreme pragmatic view, right? I think there's some textual evidence to support that, where at one point Rhonda says, like, oh, I think it's actually really inhumane to, like, parade Harold out for all of us to mock. And then there's a beat, and then Sid says, oh, I should have brought my camera, right? So, like, I guess the idea here is that, oh, there are always going to be kids that are making fun of the fat kid. But, like, Arnold's defense for him is that, like, well, did you think you were fat when you were the size you were? And Harold's like, no. And then he's like, so you just need to do that. And then you just have to be comfortable with your own body image, no matter what people are saying, which, like, first of all, is still demonizing being fat. It's still saying, like, if Harold had thought he was fat, that would be a problem, right? It's only good because Harold didn't think he was fat. Like, God forbid Harold actually be okay with the fact that he's fat, right? Or that everybody else stop seeing being fat as something to be, like, disparaged and just see it as, like, something that is true and something that is not actually a problem for anybody and that you can be proud of or, like, happy with, right? Maybe, again, we're grading this on a little bit of a 2022 curve, but I just think that, like, the hatefulness of this episode really does, like, overwhelm any sort of message it's trying to portray in a way that is, like, kind of unique in Hey Arnold, like, episode history, right? Like, I can't think of many episodes where, like, they get so interested in doing the thing that they are ostensibly supposed to be portraying is wrong, that they kind of lose the plot the way that this episode, in my mind, kind of loses the plot. So I just think that maybe this is an example of, like, our show getting wrapped up in the prevailing and insidious cultural evils of its time. But it really is it's a big, massive bummer, right? I think it's not a very great episode to watch, a hard watch. I would agree with Emily, I guess.
Yeah, very fair. but somebody who is ostensibly not a himbo, Drew. Drew, what did you think about this episode?
Is that going to be something that you say every time? Is
it like
a new call symbol? It's okay. It's my call sign.
Look up in the sky. It's the not himbo signal. Sorry, go ahead.
We'll post that to Twitter. The not a himbo signal up in the sky. This episode is interesting because they could have either A, not done this episode. Like, they didn't, no one forced them to like address this at all. Like, it didn't need addressing. So that's what's a little strange about it. But it's like, I don't think it's wrong to address like the fact that people will bully you for things that you can't control, right? Like, I think the core idea of the of that episode is present. It's just executed really poorly and then also like stomped on many times throughout the episode, right? Like, we could have easily seen like more deep examinations of like what it means to be bullied and what it means to like have self-esteem or self-love or like where that love can come from and why. And like, as you said, like Arnold is like shoehorned in here as like this, like the moral compass or guide, just because that's what he's played in the past. But like, it would have been so much better if we got a different role model for Harold in this episode to examine like what it means, right? Like someone who's lived these experiences, maybe even when they were worse, right? Like an older person who might be a little bit bigger would have been such a great person to help Harold examine these feelings. And I think that would have been something they could have examined instead of the cruise, or in, you know, during the cruise, you know, he meets someone or whatever it is, you know, they really just use the cruise as a way to make a joke almost. And it wasn't even, I feel like it was wasted, right? Like, I feel like they really could have made Harold like have some sort of real revelation. And the revelation that he had was, felt cheated. It didn't feel earned at all. And so I think that's the real problem I have with it. I mean, yeah, it's cringy, and yeah, it's you know, it's some 90s, it's cringe because it's hard to watch because of all the, you know, really, you know, bad fat phobia in it. But it also just makes like missteps in what it like set out to do, like, right, like it didn't quite hit the marks that it would set up for itself. Some like obvious things that I saw were, there's the movie Heavyweights, with Ben Stiller, where they go to there's the fat camp. And like, that movie is somehow a little bit similar and yet does the same thing. And it's almost from the same era. Like, I guess that's like, what, like year 2000, 2001, and does the message right. It like does it so, so much better, for the time period. Just go watch that movie if you're going to watch this episode. And they do a Rocky parody, right? I think that's what that was. There's like a montage scene where they even play like a fake Rocky theme, like one where they can't get sued. Very similar to the Rocky theme, a legal stand-in for the Rocky theme, as it was credited in the credits. Those are my main thing. Oh, there's this scene where Harold breaks his bed. It's after he returns from the cruise, you know, when he's supposedly much bigger, though. I mean, I think, you know, it's mostly, it's kind of hard to tell, I think. Like, I don't think that they really made a big difference. And maybe that was part of the commentary there. But when he breaks his bed, it's like kind of like a really small bed, and he's laying there, and it kind of, it just snaps in half and crumbles. And at first that scene really puzzled me, like why, what was happening there? Like, is it like an old bed? Was he really that big? What, you know, were they trying to say like, yes, he's so big that he broke a normal bed? And I want to give it some credit and say maybe it's more of like something that's happening like cerebrally in his mind. Like, there's some dysphoria going on. Like, he's feeling so big that as he's laying in bed, he breaks the bed, right? Like, it's not really addressed in any other way, right? It just kind of happens and then we move on. And I feel like that maybe is the best part of the show as a result, because of the headcanon I give to it, that it's like not really canon, right? It's like a moment that shows a feeling he's having. Those are some things that I had to say about it. Oh, also this ice cream man. Is he a recurring character?
He is. Yeah. Yes.
He's somehow he's awesome. We stan him, but also like the worst. So it's somewhere in between. We love to hate him.
Yeah, the Jolly Ollie Man is one of my two favorite parts of this episode. Now I'll just kind of rattle through these. I mean, I agree with what everybody's been saying. This to your point, Drew. This episode feels like something of an unforced error, and like kind of just a swing and a miss. And I realize those are two consecutive sports terms. But yeah, this was not like an arc or a story people were wanting to tell. It does slide, unfortunately, very appropriately into like 90s fatphobic sensibilities, and this show was not the right vehicle to tell like a good, more wholesome version of like a potential upturn that could come from that. And it is what it is. I think there are things, like I said, the couple things that I did really like, and they've already been alluded to, but Harold's parents, like I could listen to them kind of go back and forth for an entire episode, just like talking circles around a specific thing and like backtracking, you know, I wasn't doing this. Why are you doing this? Like it's maybe in a different episode that would be more difficult to listen to, but in this episode it's like, oh wow, what a breath of fresh air. This is legitimately so much fun. So they were great. The Jolly Ollie Man, as you know, we haven't seen the Jolly Ollie Man for a while. Love the Jolly Ollie Man, and his motives in this were definitely hateful, but Jolly Ollie Man is sort of like an ice cream temptress is kind of really fun. Like in a vacuum, that's a very funny thing. I think, again, it just for the if it solely for the means of like pawning ice cream away to other people, and just like the creepy guy in the dark corner of his truck is like, hey kid, you want a dilly bar? Free advertising for Dairy Queen, I guess. Dairy Queen, we know you're listening. Come on, fork over some cash. Sponsor the show, cowards. What was the other one? The Pop Johnny Pops. We know you're listening too. Don't pretend that you're not. But
you're yeah, local too.
Yeah, yeah. This is kind of a nostalgia is local to all of us, right? It's a metaphor. But yeah, the unhinged Jolly Ollie Man is a really fun sensibility. And you know, and I think Carrie, you were talking about the string of us seeing Sid and Stinky, you know, like even just beyond this episode. I mean, they've been bad friends for a while now, like most episodes that we've seen them for the last like 20 episodes or so. I feel like they've been like the bad friend characters, and sometimes they get their comeuppance, other times they don't. This is an instance where they don't, and that's like that could have easily not entirely turned this episode around, but it could have helped considerably if they like, it's not enough to show that like, oh, Harold walks out the front door confident and like, wow, we really showed Harold's really poopy friends, Stinky and Sid. Like, no, they need to they need swirlies or something, or some probably worse than that. Cause like they did some really horrific shit. That's just, yeah, I've got the timestamp. Yeah, I don't know. That's just my two cents. Stinky and Sid, fun characters, but you know, if you're going to make them bad friends, then like give them their just desserts every once in a while. Not desserts that come from the Jolly Ollie Man, mind you.
Yeah, that's a really good point about Sid and Stinky, where like I think it's one of the rare instances in which the great characterization of the show kind of works against the plot of this episode, because like it is very clear and was very clear in season one that Sid, Stinky, and Harold actually are kind of the goon squad of PS-118, right? Like they're sort of like the bad friend, or like the like bad boy group of just sort of like doofy dudes who are like always up to some weird stuff. But then like they were characterized so well, and we were like given so much to understand and root for them through, that it hurts more to see them relegated back into that role, I guess. So yeah, I think that's weird. And similarly with Harold, right? Like there's something about the fact that like Harold is such a realized character in this show. And it's like, there was such a, to Drew's point, I guess, an opportunity to like capitalize on the groundwork that they had laid in previous Harold episodes, of which there are many, that establish his characterization very well. And like, I would love to like hear him think through bullying, right? Or think through what's going on with him, right? And that this episode certainly doesn't do this. And then one last point, which is that I really love your headcanon there, Drew. But I do have to say, like, in my mind, they made the transformation of Harold post Cruz like really, really monstrous and obvious to like make it a bigger joke. Like I maybe like just like if you go back and like look at what he looks like afterwards, he looks really, really like exaggerated fat. And I think that like, unfortunately, right, like I think that that was kind of one of the bigger jokes of the episode is like, oh, we wanted to draw an even fatter Harold and it's going to be really funny, you know? And like that. So unfortunately, like for me, the bed sequence doesn't have any of the nuance that I wish it had that you suggested it had. And instead, it's just like kind of another like joke at Harold's expense, I guess.
Forgive me for trying to give this episode some credit.
Drew, I wanted to say that you had a similar thought that I had, which was just that Harold could have easily met a kid on the cruise and then related to that kid, or he really needed someone that he could relate to with this problem in particular, being bullied for being fat. And we have so many other characters in the show that could have helped him, even his parents in that scene, but they kind of just glaze over it, dismiss it, and don't want to make it an issue and don't want him to think of it as a problem. But yeah, there's Big Patty, there's his parents, there's were probably kids on that cruise. And I think we've seen the show do this sort of tackle this really well in Gerald's tonsils, where Gerald is going through all those changes with puberty, which are specific to his, you know, age and growing up, but also very specific to his identity as a black kid. And so he has people in his community who are black and who had gone through the same thing in puberty, had vocal changes, and he was able to relate to them directly and hear those experiences and understand like what those changes meant for him. So we saw that done really well in that episode. And just, I think I was thinking a similar thing. Like I wish they had gone there with that and we met a new character or seen Big Patty again or had a deeper conversation with his parents and really understood that better for him.
When I mean like in particular, because like instead of that, we get Arnold as the moral compass and Arnold's like attempt is wrong, right? Like I think that Arnold is just straight up wrong in the message he tries to do, because it's like, as best I can tell, it's basically like, oh, it's on you to be like, why are you letting what they say about you get you down? Like, do you think you're fat? No, then you shouldn't care what they say. And it's like, that is not a helpful mentality, Arnold. That doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything, but I'd like to think that those of us here are doing something. And one of those somethings is providing any last lingering thoughts, strands, shout outs, anything of that nature before we close the book on Weighing Harold. What do you guys got?
I'm not sure if this is a shout out or shade, but just wanted to note that there were no mirrors on that cruise ship. So that's all. That's it. All I got.
And despite this episode's like how cringy it is, like it is living in infamy in my brain because that he's not a fat man. He's a fat boy. Like that's a quote from the show that I like have in my brain and remember. So
I would say shout outs to that weird commercial, I guess. That's my last shout out. I think it's supposed to be funny. It doesn't really work for me. I think it's kind of weird, but you know, so shout outs to that, I guess.
He's not a fat man. He's a fat boy crawled so that don't get close to that squirrel, Timmy, you'll catch it stupid, could run, coming soon, SpongeBob rebrand. Let's get through Hey Arnold and we'll see what happens. But hey, we got through this episode. Honestly, I think everything went better than expected. We made it through all the help, the help we got from our buddy Drew. Thank you, Drew, so much again for being here today. Where can people find you online? Is there anything that you would like to plug? The floor is yours to say your piece.
Thanks so much for having me on. I always have a blast talking about talking very deeply about children's media with my good friends. So it's been a blast. People can find me on Twitter or on YouTube, Ash Cool Bro. I make like mashups sometimes. I think the last one I released was like 9 months ago, but there's enough on there that you can pretend like I release them regularly. Harry and I and someone else also, Harry's sister, have been working on a board game, and that's out, and you can buy that. It's called Decorum. I think I mentioned it the last time I was on. Might be sold out, but it'll be back around soon. And you can find some indie games I make on Itch if you search for Drooby, I think, with a Y and a B.
All those fun letters. Wow. Great plugs, Drew. Y'all should check Drew out in all those places. Play Decorum. I think Charlie Mackin was maybe the name you were looking for. One Charlie Mackin.
Listen, I know who it is. I just don't know what we're supposed to say.
Yeah.
I don't want to dox anybody.
Well, hey, recurring guest. Well, it's funny. Recurring guest Charlie Mackin. When the Mackins were on the pod, I'm pretty sure they like were very sheepish about like, oh, we didn't make any games with our friend Drew. We don't make anything. We're not artists. La di da di da.
Sounds like them.
And we had to coax it out of them. But yeah, y'all should go embarrass them more by checking those things out, by buying Decorum. But until then, dear listener, this message is for you. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody _BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Thanks again, everyone. And remember, nothing brings people closer together than cheese.